91.3 KXCI Tucson, Real People, Real Radio. Hello, Tucson. We're so happy you can join us today at 91.3 KXCI Tucson. This is Kathy Harris with my co-host, Aspen Green, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our programs on our Broad Perspectives Radio page at kxci.org. And today, we have a guest who brings so much to our community. You in Tucson may know Penelope Starr as the founder of Odyssey Storytelling, a wonderful event every month where people tell their personal stories. If you've never been there, you should go. It's great. But today, she's here to talk about her latest book, a novel called Desert Haven. Aspen, tell us more about Penelope.
I sure will. It's my pleasure. Penelope Starr is the author of Desert Haven, a novel in Link Stories, and she's also the author of the nonfiction book, The Radical Act of Community Storytelling, Empowering Voices in Uncensored Events. And like you said, Kathy, she is the founder of Odyssey Storytelling. She enjoys creative endeavors, facilitating workshops, and giving advice. Born in New York City, she migrated to the West more than 50 years ago and now lives in the foothills of the Tucson Mountains with her partner, Sylvia, and their very smart dog, Cosmos. I was wondering if Cosmos was going to be joining us today. We have had dogs on our show before.
She's on a walk.
Okay, welcome to our show, Penelope.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We were talking about last time you were on a show about a year ago, we talked about your first book, The Radical Act of Community Storytelling. And you at that time said you were expecting your first novel to come out this year. And now it has, Desert Haven. So how does that feel?
I'm so excited about it. Yeah, it's great. So I was going to say that writing a novel is very different than writing a story from my life. Although when I was done with that book, I thought, oh, I'm just so tired of telling the truth. But I didn't realize that writing novels is where you really find the truth.
Oh, that's very interesting. So I read fiction generates truth independently of fact. And because of that, fiction is a better teller of truth than nonfiction. The 1970s, which is where kind of the book began, was a period of intense excitement, change, activism, and activity for lesbians. Were you aware in the 70s of what was going on for lesbian women at that time, and what were you doing then?
The 70s were a time of exploding possibilities. It's hard to describe what it was like to young people today. Although many norms were challenged, there were still marginalized groups that had to fight for their freedoms. And I was aware of the obstacles that were still in place and how lesbians were fighting for their rights. Many leading feminists thought that lesbians shouldn't be in now National Organization of Women because it would hurt their image. Lesbians were in the forefront of the battle against AIDS, yet they got very little recognition. At that time, women-only space was created for safety, unity. Lesbian music flourished, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of joy, and there was a feeling that we could change the world.
I know that feeling, and I actually have that feeling again right now. So what inspired you to write this novel?
Well, two friends and I were going to make a documentary film about a women's land west of Tucson. And we conducted many interviews and we visited the land many times over a period of about 10 years. But it became apparent that we didn't have the resources to complete this film and we didn't know what we were doing. So I decided I wanted to turn the stories that I had heard into a fictional account because I wanted to honor these women. I wanted to bring attention to how resourceful they were and how independent they were.
I actually found it very brave of these women to pick up their lives and to venture out on their own. I wish I had had that kind of courage at that time. And how long did it take for you to write it?
The book took about maybe 6 years to complete.
You know, in doing my research for this interview, I did come across an article about Hannah Blue Heron's story that you and Luann Withy, who she was working at the Loft at Cinema at that time, you were writing about, and that was Adobe Land, where Hannah Blue Heron ended up. Was it called the Adobe Land Project? Is that the documentary?
Yeah, that was it.
So it's gone for now. Gone.
We're not able to finish it. We do have some footage, and we have, all those interviews that we did. We have tons of still pictures. We put out a call for women who had connections with Adobe Land to contact us. So we have some of that in our archives. But at this point, we're not able to finish it. I've been trying to get someone else interested in using what we have and continuing the story, but I haven't had any luck.
Perhaps after people read your book, there'll be new generated interest. Well, can you share your insights into your writing process? We've heard a lot of stories over the years by authors about the different rituals they have for writing. Did you face any unique challenges writing this novel?
Well, I have a pretty complicated life, so writing is one of my many interests. The best way for me to get a project done is to have a deadline and some uninterrupted time. So, no, I don't sit in the same chair and write for a certain number of hours or words every day, like a lot of people recommend. I'm one of those writers who writes in bursts, and then I have a lot of editing to do. And my challenge in this book was to keep track of the 15 characters over a period of 40 years. So I had to figure out where they overlapped, how their lives evolved. I had a spreadsheet, I had a three-ring binder of notes, I did 16 revisions.
You know, as I was reading it, I was thinking, how did she remember all of this? You know, because they all ended up somehow knowing each other in a certain way, and it spanned over 40 years.
Yeah.
So an Excel spreadsheet makes perfect sense. So why did you choose to make the fictional story as opposed to a biography of the women who actually lived on the land in Tucson?
Well, I wanted to capture the feeling of the times and not have it be about one particular person. There are historical accounts of particular lands. There's a wonderful book called Pagoda by Rose Norman about a community in Florida. But I wanted to go for the emotional and political truths to be found in these stories. And I thought that fiction was the way I could go there and still respect my sources.
And were there specific traits or qualities that you wish to portray about these women?
I think their independence, their joy for living, the complicated lives that they chose to be involved with, some of the struggles, all of that is real in life in general. But when you concentrate it into a community like that, I think it intensifies.
Like you said, each chapter in Desert Haven is about different characters who eventually end up at Desert Haven. I mean, it talks a little bit about where they came from and how they ended up there, and sometimes a little bit about their time after there. Some of the women showed up because they were desperate for shelter. Others were leaving abusive relationships. Others just wanted to be free as a lesbian. Why did you choose the specific characters that you did to write about?
Well, I wanted to show the diversity of the motivations and the reasons that women were drawn to this alternative lifestyle. I saw each one as a symbol representing an alternative to the misogyny, the homophobia, rampant capitalism. They were not only living away from men and society, but they were very invested in finding sustainable solutions to all of the inequities around them.
Yeah, I found it very interesting how a lot of them came with different skills. Some were into alternative healing methods, some were into gardening, and some were into cooking, some were into building, or some were into doing classes. It was something that I, after reading this book, wished I had been a part of in some way. Did any of the characters surprise you with their development as you wrote it?
Every character surprised me.
Okay.
Mostly, I created a situation and just followed where it led me. And I think that's the fun of writing fiction.
What I found when I was reading it is that I wasn't ready to leave the story or the character when the chapter was over because each chapter was about a different woman. I wanted to hear more. Like, I wanted to know what's happening to this person, but then we were on to somebody else. Have you gotten that feedback from others?
No, I haven't gotten that yet, but thanks for telling me that. For me, each of the women had their own short story, but I linked them together with the land and the relationship to JoJo and to each other. And some appear once, and some are a thread all the way to the end. But I'm
Right.
really glad to know that you connected with some of the characters.
Well, I think each chapter could be a book in itself. I'm just going to
Yeah,
say so,
right.
right? So one of the stories in your book is of Margot and Sparrow, and Sparrow's dream became creating Eco Women, which is sustainability for women by women. And it just made me curious, was there anything true about this? Was there really a group like that in Tucson?
I wish there was. As far as I know, there's nothing like Eco Women in Tucson. I kind of invented it from bits and pieces of other Tucson groups. I sort of took what I wanted and I blended them together to create this utopian organization.
Well, there's the beauty of fiction. Margot, Sparrow's partner, wrote a book that was about her life, but she fictionalized it, which kind of is what you did with Desert Haven. So, how do you think your background or personal experience influenced the stories? And is there any one character that might be modeled after you?
I think there's bits of me in all the characters. Some of my beliefs, some of my past traumas, some of my future dreams. By writing fiction, I could express that in a way that made it bigger than me. And I just want to make sure that everybody knows this is not a memoir and it's also not a true account of any of the particular women. I made it up.
Well, you made up some great stories that I wanted to know more about. So, Jojo is the woman who owned the land, and the land became Desert Haven. And she dies in 2014 in your book, and her ex-partner's daughter, Sunshine, inherits the land. It sounds to me like there could be some book or documentary on what the future of the Desert Haven becomes. What do you think?
I totally agree that Sunshine ends the book with a lot of questions. And I would like to know what the answers are too. So, yeah, it makes sense that there would be a sequel. Right now, I'm writing a different book, but I'm going to get to that sequel because I do want to find out how Sunshine unravels all this.
I like the way you say you want to find out. So obviously, in the writing process is how you find out.
They say there's two kinds of writing, the pantsers, like me, people who write from the seat of their pants, or plotters, people who outline their book and know exactly where they're going and get to the end. And I think that would be kind of discouraging because I don't want to know the end before I get there.
Okay. So why don't we stop for a music break right now? And when we come back, we'll talk about the things that you want maybe readers to take away about this book. So over to you, Kathy.
Thanks, Aspen. Penelope, you've chosen such a beautiful song called Song of the Soul by Chris Williamson for us to play today. Do you want to tell us why you chose this particular song?
To me, it's kind of the anthem of the lesbian movement from the 70s, and I think it still resonates today.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is a beautiful spiritual song by Chris Williamson from her 1975 album, The Changer and the Changed. Now, this album became one of the best-selling independent albums of all time and was described by NPR as the cornerstone of the feminist women's music movement. Chris was also an early lesbian political activist back when few were even aware of gay and lesbian issues, and she was a promoter of women-owned music companies. I really respect that. In 2018, Chris received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Americana Music Association, and at the ceremony, she said, "We've sold out Carnegie Hall 3 times. This is the first time we've been acknowledged by the industry," adding, "A woman singing to another woman, it's not such a big deal now, because now love is love is love." All right. So let's listen to Song of the Soul by Chris Williamson from her album, The Changer and the Changed. 91.3 KXCI Tucson. That is such a gorgeous song. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and we are now returning to our interview with Penelope Starr about her novel, Desert Haven.
That is a great song. And I remember seeing Chris Williamson maybe with Holly Near. I know that she used to tour with her. I don't know if she still does, several years ago here in Tucson. I just love her. And she's also mentioned in the book with that very song in the end. So that was very relevant. So are there any specific lessons or ideas you hope readers will take away from this book about feminism and lesbian history?
Well, I think we need to know about the past in order to build for the future. And young people seem to be pretty impatient. I guess that's just what they do. History lessons are important to know what the limitations were. And I felt I wanted to explore how these brave women created a new order in order to make a more just and equitable society. The struggle goes on today. It's not over.
At the end of the book, there were issues of whether trans people could come and stay at the Haven. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on this. It didn't really have a resolution in the book.
The message I was trying to get across is that people are people and we need to figure out how to live together and not allow false separations to tear us apart and divert our resources to, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me not to work to find a solution how we could live together rather than expel people.
Yeah, because in the beginning of the book, there was also this case where a woman had a little boy and everybody was very upset about possibly having a little boy come out and live there. That was interesting to me because, I mean, it just showed maybe how radical they were in the beginning of wanting to just be separate and to explore their feminism, female life.
Well, that's very typical of women's lands. And they're having to confront all this stuff and evolve. Some of them have chosen to remain anti-trans or women born women only. And some are saying, how do we expand our definition of what it means to be a woman?
So what was your experience when you visited Adobe Land, which is the real women's land outside of Tucson? You said you visited there for on and off for 10 years. What were you doing when you were going out there?
We were interviewing people. We had a camcorder and very primitive. I'm sure the recordings we have are pretty hard to decipher, but we just asked questions about people's lives and how they were doing and what was important to them. How did they survive? And then we took a lot of photographs over the years and we saw how the land started to just kind of deteriorate and there was less and less possibility. Eventually, Adobe Land got sold.
Okay, I was wondering what happened to it. It was because I think it lasted until 2018, am I right?
Yeah, the woman who owned it died and she had chosen not to put it in a land trust.
Okay.
So her nieces inherited it and they sold it.
Okay.
And ironically, what happened is two lesbians bought the land not knowing the history.
Wow, that's crazy.
And they cleared it off, which was a monumental job. And they opened it up as a campground. It's like a little campground that has no amenities. But anyway, they're out there and they have done a tremendous job making it beautiful again.
Have you ever thought of, in your past, living on a women's land like that?
Yes, and I had a son.
And so
I
therefore
couldn't.
You couldn't.
Right.
It's interesting because I've been divorced twice, and both times when I was divorced, I knew about Adobe Land. I wanted to go out there. And I didn't even realize because I had a stepson, that I could not have gone, even if I wanted to. I was curious, will you be having a book signing, and will our audience be able to come out and meet you?
Yes, I will be having a book signing at Barnes & Noble, the west side on La Cholla. It's in the remnants of the Foothills Mall. They're still there. On Saturday, August 31st, from 1 to 2:30, and I'll be reading and signing books.
I'm glad you said it's still there because I passed the Foothills Mall like last week, and half of it, or more than half of it, is torn down. I was very surprised. So they left up Barnes & Nobles. Okay, well, that's good to know. Are you still offering workshops for writers and storytellers?
I am. Recently, I facilitated a few workshops for Southern Arizona Senior Pride, and I still curate one Odyssey storytelling event every year, usually in December. I have kind of a list of all the workshops that I offer on my website, PenelopeStarr.com.
Okay, fantastic. So you kind of mentioned in the beginning of the show that you are working on another book. Can you tell us about the next book that we can expect from you?
Yes, I'm decided that I have to write these books a little faster. Both of these books took me 6 years. I'm getting up there. I'm just turned 79. I don't have 6 years to keep writing books. So this next book, I'm determined. I gave myself a deadline. I'm going to write it within a year. It's a cozy mystery with a clairvoyant lesbian sleuth set in northern Arizona. And it's very challenging because I've never written anything like that before, but I've never let that stop me either.
You do so many other things as well. I mean, putting together documentaries is another thing that you have done over the years. Do you have any other documentaries that you might be working on?
You know, writing is a lot of work and it's a lot of fun. And that's where I'm kind of focused my energies right now.
Okay. Well, I just want to thank you so much. I read the book and it was fantastic. And like I said, each chapter to me could be a book. It's very interesting to read about Desert Haven and about women who lived in an oasis out in the middle of the Sonoran Desert, which seems like an unlikely place for this to happen, but it actually really did happen. It was also very interesting to read about the challenges of women who are part of this community. Your storytelling talent just shines in this. So I'm just really glad that you put this book together. So perhaps we'll see more about these characters. There was one character in it that moved to New Mexico to go to school. And I'm like, well, did she graduate? And what did she do with it? And it turns out, I think her daughter was Sunshine. And so we did hear from Sunshine later, but I was really curious to hear about what happened to her mom. And that happened to me with all the characters. Thank you so much for being on our show today. And I do recommend this book to everybody. It's really very fascinating how many different reasons why women got together and why they found that women's land was a sacred, safe space for them.
I've read part of it. I'm in about the middle of it and I'm really enjoying it too. So I recommend it also. You know, unfortunately, that's all the time we have right now. But Penelope Starr, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about your new novel, Desert Haven. And thanks for your many contributions to our community.
Thank you so much, Aspen and Kathy, for inviting me on today.
It was definitely our pleasure.
And thanks to all of you out there for listening to Broad Perspectives Radio today. This is Kathy Harris with Aspen Green, and you can hear more of our shows on the Broad Perspectives Radio page at kxci.org. For now, stay tuned because next up is Jennifer Davis Page with Boom Goddess Radio. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.